Hi, we've hippity hoppityed off to a different land indeed, as we did just a few moments ago, I think. It's very nice to have Amy Lane with us. Here's what happened. So we got a call. Buzz Aldrin said, hey, I'd love to do the show. And we said, what time? And he said, 10 o'clock. And we said, oh, well, we have book picks. And he said, well, how about 10 o'clock? And we said, all right, that works. And yes, we called you and said, do you mind coming in a little later? And you were nice enough to do that. We get our book picks for the week from our favorite people in the world, and those are independent booksellers. Amy Lane is one of them. She is with the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York, right on J Street, and it's always a pleasure to welcome her to the program. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, as always.
So where would you like to begin?
I'm going to start with, this is the week that celebrates the 400th anniversary of both William Shakespeare and Cervantes' deaths.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting. Who knew that they both died within a day of one another?
I did not know that.
I did not either until, like, very recently. And, of course, everybody talks about Shakespeare and his lasting legacy on our world of art, literature, drama, what have you.
Right.
And very few people really talk about Cervantes. So I'm going to talk about Cervantes. So take that, William Shakespeare. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. What I want to talk about is the book called The Man Who Invented Fiction, and it's how Cervantes ushered in the modern world by William Edgington. And I'm actually going to let Harold Bloom speak for me. Edgington's study of Cervantes is a poignant account of Don Quixote, which, with Montaigne's essays, is the only work contemporary with Shakespeare able to compete with his transcendent power. We know nothing that truly matters about Shakespeare, whose inwardness is concealed in the cosmos of his dramas. But with Cervantes and Montaigne, we know nearly everything, since each became his own subject. 4 centuries after Cervantes and Shakespeare died, The Man Who Invented Fiction is a worthy memorial to the eternal achievement that Cervantes wrought out of his own suffering and hard-won wisdom.
Oh, by the way, Harold Bloom is a very smart man.
Uh-huh. Indeed he is. He's a heck of a scholar.
Good to quote.
And
sure.
So again, I think it's a lovely time that if you have yet to read Don Quixote, please read Don Quixote. I know I will. And take a look at this book, which is a lovely study of that wonderful work of fiction, which really brings us to our modern era.
I greatly enjoyed this book, actually. It's William Edgington's The Man Who Invented Fiction.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Now, speaking of fiction, let's move on to Jane Austen. Sort of. And that will be the book Eligible by Curtis Sittenfeld, who has written a modern-day retelling of Pride and Prejudice. So, of course, one of the most famous and favorite novels of, you know, the 1800s. And it is an absolutely delightful, delightful modern-day retelling. So even if you think you're familiar with Pride and Prejudice and you know all of it backwards and forwards, I urge you to pick up this charming, charming book. It really does pull everything into a very timely fashion without losing any of the sense of character, romance, social, I don't know, what do you want to call them? Social mores? Is that the right
mores.
Term?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sure.
Right. So Joe's like, yeah, whatever. Pride, Prejudice. Go on. It's chicklet.
No,
Let's move on from that.
No. Just basically doing what I did the last half hour.
I'm going to sit back.
I'm just going to go along with it.
But you should. It's really fun. So for those who are fans, and maybe even those who haven't really experienced it or feel that it's too arcane, this is a nice place to start.
I love her writing.
Austen?
No.
Curtis Sittenfeld.
Curtis Sittenfeld. Prep, right?
Yeah.
Great stuff.
It is great stuff. Yeah. She is a great writer.
Yeah. Very. Mm-hmm. I saw her interview somebody, and I was more taken by her to the point now that I can't remember who she interviewed, but it was somebody cool. Oh, it was Judy Blume.
Oh.
It was Judy Blume. And
wow.
I was really taken by her. I thought she was just a really, really incredible.
Yeah.
And she was reading from her work, too. And it was really good.
It is very interesting.
Eligible by Curtis Sittenfeld. All right, next.
Okay, next is The Last Painting of Sarah DeVos. Have you read that one by Dominic Smith?
I have not. Okay. The Last Painting of Sarah DeVos.
Yeah, it's It's kind of a haunting cover.
Yes.
Right? I like it very much. So this is really kind of an exciting story, I think. It's about, like, a cursed painting, a master forgery. There's 300 years spanning each stories. There's two women, both artists. Originally, Sarah DeVos, who master painter in the Dutch Amsterdam 1600s, and she paints this work called At the Edge of a Wood, and that's the cursed painting. And then this other woman named Eleanor, or Ellie Shipley, who is an art historian, who is also a master forger, who forged this work back in the 1950s, who then in the year 2000 has to authenticate them.
Oh, that old tale.
Oh, that old tale indeed. But if I've got a minute here.
You do. You're good.
I want to read the beginning because the beginning is charming and it really sets the tone. Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Hello. So this is the Upper East Side, November 1957. So that's part of the charm of this book is that it flips between three different time periods. So you've got the 1637, 1957, and the year 2000. So here we go. The painting is stolen the same week the Russians put a dog into space, plucked from the wall right above the marital bed during a charity dinner for orphans. This is how Marty DeGroot will tell the story in the years ahead, how he'll spin it for the partners at the law firm and quip it to comedic life at dinner parties and over drinks at the racket club. We're dipping shrimp in cocktail sauce, working Rachel's best china out on the terrace because it's mild for an early November, you understand, while two thugs, middlemen disguised as caterers, let's say, are swapping out the real painting with a meticulous fake. He'll be particularly proud of that last phrase, meticulous fake. He'll use it with friends and insurance agents and the private investigator because it sets up the rising action of the story, suggests that a prodigy or mastermind has been patiently plotting against him, just as the Russians have been conspiring all these years to colonize the stratosphere. The phrase will also help disguise the fact that Marty didn't notice the beautiful forgery for months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It is good stuff. So please, please pick up this one wonderful book.
The Last Painting of Sarah DeVos by Dominic Smith.
Yes.
All right. Next.
Okay. Now we're going to get into the serious side of things, which is, I don't know if you've read or heard of this one, but it's The Life and Adventures of a Haunted Convict.
No.
Oh. Okay. Well, I kind of thought you might have, but alas. This is a book.
Oh, no.
That's yeah.
Very cool.
So, actually, why don't you read the whole subheading of this?
The Life and Adventures of a Haunted Convict, the recently discovered memoir of African-American life and incarceration in the 19th century.
Yeah.
Wow.
Specifically, the 1830s to the 1860s. So here it takes place, he's from Rochester, New York.
Austin Reed.
Austin Reed. Northerner, right? Not
yes.
A slave. But all too often throughout his life, starting from the age of six, treated like a slave, certainly someone lesser than. And this manuscript was discovered at an estate sale in 2009, and it took quite a while to authenticate it and suss out who, in fact, this author was. And it's horrifying, fascinating. It puts things in a whole new perspective in the idea that, you know, we often think of the North as being, well, kind of literally and figuratively above slavery, right, during that
yes.
era. And yet it shows how, while we may not have held slaves as readily up here, we certainly didn't treat people as equal, right? So this young man is, there's this great piece by the editor Caleb Smith when he introduces all of this, where he talks about this young boy, Austin Reed, who was interned at the age of 10, I think, and because he had been whipped by this farmer to whom he had was an indentured servant, essentially, because his father had passed away and his mother, you know, needed help and had all these kids and sent him off to this farmer. And this farmer was whipping him and some of the other boys, and they set fire to his house, right? And there's a correlation that was made by the editor that while the whip was, you know, obviously a weapon, it was also an emblem to this man of slavery itself. And so to fire became his symbol of insurrection, right? So he set fire to many, many things. There's a lot of talk of him while even being interred to to trying to set fire and to escape and free himself from this type of bondage. He wasn't an innocent, right? So he was put in jail for these wrongs, but at the same time, he was rebelling against the wrongs that were being done to him.
Yeah.
It's incredible, and I think it's not at all understood and known, and this is something that is on par with certainly 12 Years a Slave.
The Wife and Adventures of a Haunted Convict by Austin Reed, edited by Caleb Smith. Yeah. We have time for probably one more.
Okay, well then I have to actually talk about my picture book pick, which is The Bear and the Piano.
The Bear and the Piano?
Yes, by David Litchfield.
Oh, he doesn't quite reach it, does he?
Well, he does eventually. He's just a cub on the cover.
I see.
So he finds this piano in the clearing in the woods and he plonks it and it kind of freaks him out, but he likes the musical tone and tries again, and he teaches himself how to play. And so then he plays for all of his bear friends in the woods. And some humans come along and hear him playing and say, hey, you should come out to our world and play there because people will really love this. And so he does, after much deliberation on his part, because it's a hard thing to leave your home and your friends and your family. But he wanted to try some new experiences. So he goes out into the wide world, becomes a famous pianist. He's well revered and loved, and then decides he wants to go back home. And so he goes back home, and when he comes to his clearing, he doesn't see anybody. And he's a little worried that he might have made them upset by leaving. He has those moments of doubt. But then he sees a friend who sort of runs away and chases his friend back to the clearing where he finds that picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is their piano, his piano. And all of these scrapbooks, basically, these pages.
As if they were remembering him.
And keeping track of him while he was in this new life. And it's this beautiful sort of allegory of family and friendship and home and leaving home and how home never really leaves you.
This book is gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
The Bear and the Piano by David Litchfield, and it is from Clarion Books, and absolutely beautiful.
It is. I love it.
Good stuff. Well, you can find out more other good stuff by going to the website, which is opendoor-bookstore.com. Opendoor-bookstore.com.
Yes. Celebrating 45 years, mind you.
Wait, this month?
May.
Excellent. Good for you. Or you can visit them on J Street in Schenectady.
Please
you can
do.
Also find Amy's list on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Amy Lane, it's always a thrill to see you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.